If you could turn in your Bibles, please, to the second epistle of John towards the end of the New Testament, please, to John. The elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth, because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, in truth and love. I rejoice greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. And now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. And this is the commandment, just as you have heard from the beginning, so that you should walk in it. For many deceivers have gone out into the world. Those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked work. Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of your elect sister greet you. Well, you may do what I tend to do often on a New Year's Day and go for a walk. When I was younger and lived in Ireland, myself and my best friend on New Year's Day would go out and hike through the Mourne Mountains in the snow, recklessly dressed in completely inappropriate clothing, and assuming that if we got lost, our Christmas dinner would be enough to keep us alive for a few days. New Year's Day walk. I didn't manage to get on one this year because our little baby arrived, and I guess I'd want to say thank you to those who sent cards, presents, mails, and so forth. We're very grateful for all the love and support and help from people here. I wonder, as I open a sermon by talking about my personal life and, you know, the birth of a baby and thank people for those sort of personal things, I wonder, do you think, is it appropriate for the preacher to open a sermon in that way? Is it right for a preacher to talk about personal family matters at the start of a sermon? Should I not be focusing on the truth of biblical doctrine? Should I not be diving straight into the Bible passage to explain and teach it clearly? Well, let's come back to that question later on, because it is relevant to the letter of 2 John. But first of all, let me just draw your attention to the fact that 2 John is a letter which is about walking. 2 John verse 4, I rejoice greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. These Christians in this little church that John wrote to are walking in the truth. Walking was an image that was used in the Bible in many places to describe the Christian life. The idea that we are going somewhere, that we are headed towards heaven, that we walk together, that there's a purposefulness, a direction to our lives. It's an image that has been picked up throughout church history. St. Augustine wrote in one of his books, "This life is a journey in which we travel to our homeland." The great American preacher Jonathan Edwards, in one of his sermons, A Christian Pilgrim, he said, "Christians are pilgrims journeying to heaven." And most famously of all, Bunyan, in his wonderful book, Pilgrim's Progress, pictured a Christian as one on a long journey wandering through many trials and difficulties to get to the celestial city. Christians are people who are walking. And John, in this little letter, says that the Christians in this church, they are walking in the truth. That means that the idea of the truth, it speaks of the reality of both the person of Jesus, who said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." It speaks of the reality of the person of Jesus and the doctrinal teaching, which ensures that we relate to the real Jesus. Today, we get to know who Jesus is through the truth of the doctrine, of the teaching of the New Testament. And as we read it and study it and have it preached to us, as we understand it accurately, we come to know that we trust in the real Jesus Christ. There is truth to the person we trust in. And so John rejoices to hear that these Christians understand and believe the truth of the teaching of Jesus Christ, by which he means they are holding to the true teaching of him, and so they have the true Jesus living in them. But there is a danger facing this little church. It seems that there are deceptive teachers out propagating false views of Jesus Christ. People who are traveling around the country denying the true teaching of Jesus. And this is a threat to this little Christian church. Have a look at verses 7 and 8. "Many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves so that you do not lose what you have worked for, but may gain a full reward." John wants the Christians to maintain a living, true relationship with Jesus. And that requires that a person abide, rest, and remain in the true teaching of Jesus. Verse 9, "Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son." A Christian should mature and grow. There is progress to our walk, but it's a progress of a deeper appreciation of Jesus' teaching. It's never a progress beyond his teaching. Progression beyond the truth of Jesus' teaching is not real progress, it's regress. So the situation that John writes to is clear. This church holds to the true teaching of Jesus, but there's a threat and a danger to them from deceptive teachers who are denying the truths essential to being a Christian. These deceivers are denying that Jesus really is God become man. They, to use John's language, do not confess the coming of Christ in the flesh. Now that may mean that they denied it publicly and directly, or it may mean that they just downplayed its importance. Or it may be that they ignored some of the consequences and implications of Jesus coming in the flesh. We don't really know. But the fact of the matter is, the church believes the truth of Christian doctrine, and these deceivers are encouraging people to deny it. Now, in that sort of situation, what would you expect the Apostle John to do? The church believes true doctrine, and that true doctrine is being challenged. How would you expect the Apostle John to respond? Wouldn't it make sense to restate clearly and unequivocally the true doctrine that's being challenged? The deceivers are denying that Jesus is Christ in the flesh. The sensible, logical response is surely to teach clearly and in detail the truth that Jesus is the Christ come in the flesh. To say to the church, you understand and believe the truth of who Jesus is. Don't give that up. You remind yourselves what that truth is. Don't forget it. Let me explain it to you again more clearly. Where false doctrine is promoted, surely true doctrine needs to be restated. Well, the massive surprise of 2 John and the heart of its message, I think it becomes clear when we see that the Apostle John adopts a completely different response. Have a look at what John tells the church to do in order to protect them from the deceivers who teach false doctrine. It's verses 5 and 6. verse 5 and 6. Now I ask you, dear lady, the church that is, I ask you, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. And this is the commandment, just as you've heard from the beginning, so that you should walk in it. John tells the church we should love one another. John tells them to walk in love. Walking in love is the way this church will be kept walking in the truth. The logic is very tight and very precise. In verses 5 and 6, John tells them to walk in love. And his reference to a new commandment and the commandment we've had from the beginning, that's a reference back to John's gospel, in which Jesus tells his disciples, I'm giving you a new commandment, but it's really the commandment from the beginning that you love one another, and by this all people will know you're my disciples. He tells them in verse 5 and 6, love one another. And in verse 7 and following, he gives them the reason that he wants them to love one another. Verse 7, for many deceivers have gone out. It's very precise and very logical. I'm telling you to love one another, verses 5 and 6, for, because many deceivers have gone out who deny the truth that Jesus is the Christ in the flesh. Human logic tells us that the way to keep Christians walking in the truth is to keep explaining the truth clearly, to keep stating it in detail, to remind them of it again and again. Bible logic tells us that the way to keep Christians walking in the truth is to help them walk in love. The Apostle John often writes in John's Gospel, in his three letters, and in Revelation about the relationship between truth and love. You may remember that one of the churches in the letter of Revelation, a church that understands truth and can work out who's right and wrong doctrinally, but they've lost their first love for Jesus Christ. The Apostle John is often interested in the relationship between truth and love. And in the letter of 2 John, he's a specific relationship in mind. And he wants to argue that love between Christians is actually one of the main ways that God protects a church against untrue doctrinal teaching. We keep walking in the truth by walking in love. Truth and love are organically related in biblical thought. In the rest of our time together, I just want to look at the reason that I think John argues for this, and then mention some of the possible implications for us, the reason and the implication. What is the reason that John believes walking in love will keep us walking in the truth? I think that he exposes his assumptions and his reasoning in the opening three verses of the letter. And people usually think that the opening few verses are just an introduction. And, well, they are, but they're not just an introduction. The opening three verses are actually a highly condensed theological argument, a highly condensed theological framework which makes sense of John's argument and his encouragement to the church. I'll just try and break it open for you in three short points. What is it that John assumes and thinks that explains his approach? First of all, John himself, the Apostle John, he loves all who know the truth. You see that in verse 1. The elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth. John himself is in a loving relationship with all people who know the truth. Okay? John loves all who know the truth. And why is that? It's because of the truth that is in all Christians. Verse 2. Because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. Okay, so John loves all who know the truth because of the truth that is in all Christians. And the crucial thing is that truth that's in all Christians, that makes John love all Christians, that truth is the gift of God's grace. Verse 3, grace, mercy and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ the Father's Son in truth and love. It's dense and it is dense thinking, but let me sum it up. John is saying that he loves all Christians because they all have the same shared experience of God's grace. And it is the nature of God's grace that it is given in truth and love. Verse 3, in truth and love. The grace, mercy and peace that will be with us and is in us from God the Father, it's given in truth and love. It's the nature of God's grace that it comes wrapped in truth and love. And therefore, it is appropriate and necessary that every person who experiences God's grace walks in truth and love together. It's the nature of the gift of God's grace that all who receive it will walk in truth and love, because the grace itself comes wrapped in God's truth and love. Let me try and illustrate that concept with a story. Imagine you've been invited to a dinner party next week at somebody's house and you don't know where the host lives. So you need directions. And you do what many of us do today, and you get the postcode that you're going to and you type it into Google Maps. And within half a second, you have on your computer screen an accurate map and accurate step-by-step directions to tell you how to get to the party. You know, exit your house, turn left, go down 50 metres, turn right, and you know, you keep going, and you're there. You follow the directions to the party, and you arrive, and over dinner you're chatting to the other people at the party, and you find out that somebody else at the party used Google Maps to get directions as well. You've both received the gift of true accurate directions from Google Maps. You've got a shared experience. Does it follow that your heart is warmed and drawn to that other person? Does your shared experience of accurate, true information mean that you love each other? You feel close to this other person who has also relied on Google Maps? Well, no, of course not. It wouldn't make any sense. Your common experience of true, accurate information is not enough to draw your hearts together in love. You've walked in truth together, but not love. But imagine it was different. Imagine your directions didn't come from Google Maps at all, but they came in the mail in a letter from the host of the party. And the host explains that she's been having a really difficult time over the last year or two, and she's got a little group of friends who've been very supportive and helpful to her. And she wants to throw a dinner party for those special close friends who've all loved her and helped her. There's a little group of you, and you each get this handwritten letter which gives you directions and thanks you for your kind support over recent times. So when you get to the party, you meet these other people that you've not met before, but you find that they all are in a close, loving relationship with this person as well, the host of the party. You have a shared experience of loving and having a close relationship with the host of the party. Now, wouldn't it make sense for you to feel yourself drawn to the other dinner party guests, that there's a certain shared love and warmth between you? The bonds of love between you are real because you have a shared experience of not just truth, but love. The point is that a shared experience of accurate, true information does not necessarily draw the recipients together in a shared love for each other. But a shared experience of truth and love, a loving relationship which is true and real, that does draw all the recipients together. And all Christians share in the true and loving gift of God's grace. All Christians have a relationship with Jesus Christ which is true and real and loving. And that being the case, how can a Christian not love another Christian? God's gift of grace is given wrapped in truth and love, and so it is fitting that all who unwrap that gift walk in truth and love together. That, I think, is the undergirding assumption that the Apostle John has when he argues that this little church will keep walking in truth and if and through walking in love together. Now, once we realize that walking in love and truth are this closely related, we begin to see that we need to walk in love in order to keep walking in truth. This has a number of implications, and let me just mention a few of them briefly. What are the implications of realizing that we need to walk in love together if we're going to keep walking in truth? Well, firstly, we realize that you cannot hold on to the truth of Christian doctrine by just focusing on the truth. It's easy to think that the way we mature and grow as Christians is by understanding ever more detail about Christian doctrine, reading one more book about theology. And, you know, one wants to encourage the reading and study of the scriptures. But you can't hold on to truth just by focusing on truth. It's only in the context of other people who love the Lord Jesus Christ that we can actually hold on to the truth. So I wonder, you know, are you opening your life to relationship with other Christians? Or are you just trying to do it on your own, just getting the information from books or the internet? It's not enough. Because the gift of God's grace that you're trying to grapple with, trying to hold on to, it is a gift of truth and love. And you can only hold on to it in the context of others who want to walk in truth and love together. And so one of the great implications that arises to the surface in the letter of 2 John is that the local church is the place where people ought to love each other. John refers to the church in this letter with that interesting metaphor, the elect lady, verse 1. And he mentions later on in the letter that he personally desires to see this lady, this church. And he mentions that the elect lady, this church, has a sister church. I mean, the image, the metaphor of sister and lady, it seems to be an image that conjures up relationship. You know, he's talking about the church in terms that suggest the church is a family, and each little church is related to other churches in terms of being like a sister. Verse 12 and 13, though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of your elect sister greet you. You can see there the way John himself feels love for the Christians of this church. He wants to see them face to face. That's why the letter's so short. He's lots of things to say, but he wants to meet them and be with them. It's not enough for the Apostle John to just send a letter. He wants to be there because he loves them. That love between Christians in church is actually one of God's strongest ways of protecting his people from doctrinal error. That's why, to mention the start of the sermon, that's why I think it is appropriate for me to mention how much I appreciate the love and support of other Christians when we have a new baby in our family. Because the love that we get from other Christians is actually one of the ways that God keeps us believing the truth of Christianity. And I've spoken to older teachers who have drifted away from Bible-believing doctrine in various ways. And often when you speak to them, if they're honest, they say the reason initially that they drifted was because they found people who didn't believe Christian doctrine to be more loving and more kind than some of the people they knew who did believe Christian doctrine. Now, obviously, that is no excuse, but it is often the case that people drift from holding to true Christian doctrine because rightly or wrongly they perceive a lack of love in those of us who hold to true Christian doctrine. It is actually a very pointed truth that you can get from 2 John, and a very pointed, brutal implication that my lack of love for another Christian may in time be the reason they become a heretic and deny the truth of Christian doctrine. My love is the way God will keep them believing the truth of Christianity. We think it's intelligence or reading which keeps Christians sound. The letter of 2 John teaches it's actually the love from other Christians that helps us keep believing that Christianity is true. Another, that's the importance of the love in the local church is an implication. Another important implication is that the love Christians have for each other will never be increased by ignoring or downplaying the truth of Christian doctrine. The truths of Christianity are organically related to the love that we have for each other. And so we will never increase our love for each other by ignoring or downplaying the truth that is the basis of that love. John Stott, in his lovely little commentary on the letters of John, written back in the 1960s, I think. He put it very well. He said this, quote, "If we are Christians, we are to love our neighbours and even our enemies. But we are bound to our fellow Christians by a special bond of truth. Truth is the ground of reciprocal Christian love. If this is so, we shall never increase the love which exists between us by diminishing the truth that we hold in common." End quote. Sadly, all too often today, church leaders have tried to justify rejecting or ignoring or downplaying important truths of the Bible in the name of promoting love and good relationships. Well, the only way to promote loving, good relationships between Christians is to build upon and rejoice together in the truth of what God has said through Jesus Christ. Love will not be increased by ignoring the truth of Christian doctrine. And finally, a final implication is that John goes on in his letter to make the point that refusing to support those who deny key Christian truth is not at all unloving. Refusing to support those who deny key Christian truth is not at all unloving. You see, in verses 10 and 11, John strongly urges Christians to not help or support those who deny key Christian truth. Verse 10, "If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked work." Tolerance can simply be indifference to the truth. And shared bonds of love for other people who know Jesus will motivate us to refuse to help those who deny the truth of Christianity. Now, obviously, there is a danger if we want to not help those who deny the truth of Christianity. There is the danger that we go about that in a way that is proud or unloving, which flows from a fear of people who are slightly different from us in some way. Now, we don't want that. But the point is, if we refuse to help those who deny key truths of Christianity, but we do so from within the context of a loving local church, then the loving local church that we're a part of will help ensure that the way we go about this is in fact loving. It's not just me on my own out hunting heretics. No, it's a local church loving each other, protecting each other, and under the care and guidance of the elders, saying, look, you know, what's going on there is not exactly the way we would do it, but it's not so important that we need to make a big fuss about it. But this issue here actually really does matter to our local church, and out of love, it is important that our local church makes clear where we stand on that matter. The love of the local church provides a guide and a framework from which Christians can love each other by refusing to help those who promote the denial of the truth of Christianity. People today assume that saying no, refusing to help, refusing to support somebody, people assume that that is unloving. The Apostle John makes the strongest possible argument for the importance of love in the Christian life. Love between Christians is one of the key ways that God protects his church from doctrinal error. And when he argues that we should not help those who deny key Christian truth, he was still being loving when he made that argument. He didn't forget the main point of his letter. So this new year, I wonder, will you walk in truth and in love? Will you realize that one of the key ways you will learn to walk in the truth of Jesus Christ's teaching is by opening yourself to the love of other Christians and seeking to love other Christians yourself in your church? If you're struggling to believe and hold on to some of the key truths of Christianity, if you're not really clear yet on what it means for Jesus Christ to die for you, to bring you into a living relationship with God, perhaps you need to open your life more to the love of other Christians. You don't need to keep worrying away at things on your own. Invite somebody around for dinner. Ask to spend some time with another Christian. Ask for help from another Christian in church. It may be that the loving truth that God shines into our lives through Jesus Christ becomes more clear to us precisely as we seek to love each other. And to those of us who do know the truth of the teaching of Jesus Christ, those of us who do know that Jesus has done everything necessary to get us to heaven, will we take seriously this year the biblical teaching that we hold on to that truth through loving each other? And so in light of the preciousness of the truth that Jesus is the Christ, in light of the terrible eternal consequences of failing to hold on to the truth that Jesus is the Christ, in light of the many deceivers who have gone out into the world and deny that Jesus is the Christ, in light of all those things, in the words of 2 John verse 5, I ask you, dear lady, dear church, not as though I'm writing to you a new commandment, but one that you've had from the beginning, I ask you that you love one another. Amen.